You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, David Sennon-Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Today, I chatted with Jordi Romero. He's the co-CEO and co-founder of Factorial. Now, I'm sure all of you know what Factorial is, but for those of you that don't, it's an HR company out of Spain founded in 2016. Now, Jordi and I were able to chat over Factorial's rise as a unicorn in 2022, the difference between starting a company in San Francisco, Silicon Valley versus Europe versus Spain, how he sees Spain as a fertile founding ground for HR tech companies, where it fits in that competition, the future of Factorial, whether it's for an IPO or whether or not he wants to continue building and delivering new products, the impact of automation on those products, and so on. So I hope you're looking forward to that. But before, a quick message from our sponsor, Vanta.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstars startups, who trust Vanta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vanta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hello, Jordi, and welcome to EU Startups Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm very interested in today's episode, actually, because, you know, Factorial is obviously such a giant name. We use it here at the office. I may not love it that I have to input my time every day, but I appreciate the quality of the product.
Thank you so much. And we'll make sure that our AI agents do most of the work for you. So you don't even have to do that.
Great. Now that would be wonderful. I will support that. Before we get started, I think it's always best to allow the guest, you, to present yourself, your company, and sort of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again. I'm Jordi Romero, one of the founders and CEO at Factorial. Factorial is a company that's turning 10 this year. So it's a very exciting year for us. And we are very glad to be helping more than 16,000 businesses, more than 1 million people every single day, in running all the business administration, everything from HR to finance and IT, with a beautiful software and AI agents to automate as much administration as possible, help people focus on what matters the most, and help everybody grow.
Great. We at EU Startups have been paying attention to Factorial for a while now, longer than I've been with EU Startups, actually. And I had a look back at the previous publications, and we've covered many of your funding rounds when you turned unicorn. So we've been there kind of paying attention. Obviously, we're Barcelona-based as well, so it's always great to see, you know, such a great company stem from this. So I thought a good place to begin the our chat here is kind of going back to the beginning, because what Factorial tries to address is a very clear and it's a very obvious thing, right? HR processes, how we just talked about how you're trying to automate it, trying to not make it so manual. So I just want to hear about what made you think that this was a problem that was big enough to make a company around, because obviously you're not alone in this. So I want to hear where you thought you could come in and provide a special and unique look on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the root of everything is my co-founders and I, we're all computer engineers. We love computers. We love automation. And we love to see, you know, humans focus on things that only humans can do, which is a statement that used to be way more clear a few years ago than it is now with the rise of agents and AI. But yeah, sure. 10 years ago, my co-founders and I had already experienced scaling companies, learning how to build an entire organization, hiring people, managing them, setting up sales and marketing, product teams, finance, support, like all the functions of our business. And we always struggled by how much time we needed to spend in just the pure management of the business and the administration of the business. And we were always hoping that there would be some technology, some, you know, computer that would help us focus on what we wanted to do and kind of run everything else on autopilot. So almost 10 years ago, we decided to start investigating this problem deeper. We realized that it is the largest software market that we had ever encountered, because pretty much every human that works for an organization is suffering from this problem, and is suffering for hours a day in a lot of the cases. And obviously that means that it's a big market. If you can help people save hours a day, you can have a huge impact on the organizations that use your product, and you can also build a very large business around it.
Sure. And before Factorial, then you were also, it's not your first time as an entrepreneur, and it's not your first time kind of, heading a company. You were with Red Booth, if I have that right in my notes. Yes. Red Booth, which included time in San Francisco, which I want to get to. But before we kind of launch into that, I just want to hear if there were any lessons you brought from that previous experience in a company into what Factorial is today.
Yeah. So I've been building software for over 20 years now, way over 20 years. And, you know, my co-founders have been also building companies together and separately. And there were a lot of lessons that we brought into Factorial. I would say two big pillars of our experience. One from Red Booth, which was, creating an extremely intuitive and easy to use software makes a huge difference. It is way easier said than done. Most software is actually pretty terrible, and people just use it because they have no alternative. And when you work on certain industries, like I used to be in the productivity and collaboration space, there are so many tools that you really needed to stand out. And the way that we found to stand out was through user experience. So that intuitive user experience focus, you know, a lot of design, a lot of engineering excellence allowed us to stand out. That's something in the DNA of Factorial. And in the world of business management and HR in particular, which is where we started, usually software tools available were really ugly and still are for, you know, most of the cases. And it was relatively easy to stand out. It's true that it's hard to stand out, build something easy to use while operating a hardcore compliance world where laws, regulations, and very specific business practices need to be streamlined in a way that the complexity is hidden from the user. That is one big pillar of learning that we brought into Factorial. And then the other one, I would say, is more from IDNIC, which is the company that my co-founder Bernat started when we were at university, and expanded across Europe with a direct sales team and a lot of SEO and inbound marketing effort. I think we combined these two things to build Factorial in what it is today. We are a very European, international business with a lot of content out there, a lot of inbound traffic, a brand that many people know and kind of trust when it comes to business management. And then we have a very easy to use software that our users, for most part, really, really love.
Well, you've covered such a large range of things there, and there's so many questions that I can kind of lead with from just your answer there. But I think maybe the one that's calling to me the most right now is you talk about the as a pillar of Factorial and what you learned, this expansion, right, and growing globally from Europe. And that when you're talking about, because there's a lot of, this is something a lot of founders run into, difficulties when they're growing in Europe. And we hear a lot of complaints when it's, whether it's policy, regulation, framework, whatever it is. So I want to hear more about what that was like for Factorial when it got to the growth stage, when it got to going global. Was that a difficult thing to apply? Because I've seen you have offices in the US, Latin America. So was kind of expanding out of Europe, was that kind of a breath of fresh air and saying, oh, it's so much easier now? Or what was that process like?
Yeah, we currently have offices across Europe as well, Munich, Cologne, Milan, Paris, Barcelona, Madrid. So we're fortunate to come from a relatively small country, which is Spain. So in the context of the world, Spain, you know, it's a beautiful country, but it's not a very large percentage of the world's GDP. So we knew very early on that our ambition would not be fulfilled with our local country. But at the same time, we happen to be in a market that is very deep. And by very deep, I mean that, you know, all businesses are potential customers of Factorial, and all employees inside of those businesses are potential users of Factorial. So even Spain alone is a multi-billion dollar market for us. And, so it's not enough, but it's still a lot. So if you combined the ambition to go global from the first day, the fact that we were relatively constrained by our home market, it meant that very early on we started internationalizing. We have neighboring countries like France and Portugal and Italy, which are, you know, relatively similar in terms of business practices and culture to Spain. We also have Germany, which is a little bit different, but it's also a very, very solid and healthy SME and mid-market economy that we were very curious about since the get-go. And then we've got America as a whole, Latin America, where we share, for most part, language with Spain and Portugal, and then the US, which is the single largest software market out there. So we were, from the first year of Factorial, learning about those markets, building a product, and being curious about how well our product worked in those markets. Now, at the same time, we realized that because we do compliance, we do HR, finance, and IT. These are worlds that are regulated. These are worlds where the user is not necessarily a tech-savvy user. He's not a technologist. Mm. They have a lot of questions. They need a little bit of hand-holding. So we couldn't necessarily go global as in a self-service website that just converts and sells to any customer, right? Like, you know, productivity product can actually do. So we built our go-to-market country after country. Now, we did that very fast. So in the first few years of operation, we rolled out operations across most of Europe. We started hiring French and Italian and German and Portuguese speakers, native speakers in our Barcelona office. Then we tried to do America from here, but then the time zone we realized was a bit of a pain. Well, actually a very big pain. So yeah, we decided to open offices across the ocean into the same time zone and into the same countries that we were operating in. And it was not easy. It was definitely not popular. I remember a lot of board meetings with our investors where we presented that we were going from one country to nine countries at once, you know, covering half the world's GDP in a single expansion project. And they said that would never work and that we were completely nuts. And, you know, it was definitely not easy. There were some mistakes made, but eventually it all worked out. Not right away. Some countries worked right away. Some took a little bit more work, but eventually they all worked actually very, very well. And the fact that we went early and we went hard meant that we could start compounding our learnings and our expansion sooner than pretty much everybody else.
And you've talked here about the scaling across Europe and, you know, the different innovations you're running into. And I'm curious because I've had a look over just our coverage of this past year when it comes to companies in the HR tech space. Right. And you've been around since 2016, of course. So this is all very new company. They're just starting to get their grounding. They're just trying to get their funding. I think overall, I've seen over 46 million in kind of funding around HR tech space that we've published. And I'm curious to see, where do you see Factorial in that competitive landscape when we talk about European innovation? Because you're a senior in this group, and you're a unicorn, obviously. But how do you see that other companies are coming up and maybe providing a bit of competition to what you do?
I think good markets attract competition. We were not the first ones at all. There were many companies in our space. The reason we decided to start a company in this market is because we thought we could do it better. I just don't think it makes sense for entrepreneurs to chase empty spaces. I think entrepreneurs should chase real markets, and real markets tend to attract competition. So that's totally fine by me. As long as we believe we can do a better job for our customers, we have a right to exist and we have a right to win. I think particularly your question applied to the context of 2025, 2026, and especially, you know, late 25, early 26, with the birth of real agentic behavior. That is when it gets exciting. Because here you will see two kinds of companies. And it's not new and old. It's not native or traditional SaaS, like native AI or traditional SaaS. I think you will see the difference between the good companies and the not so good companies. The good companies will always take advantage of the cutting edge technology to the newest, most powerful user experience and technology that can, you know, drive more impact to the customers, to the users that are using our products. And I think we are being tested right now. All the industry is being tested. Some are reacting fast. I, you know, hope that we are among this group of people that are reacting fast and taking advantage of the newest technologies. And some are arguing against the market, and some are arguing against the forces of technology innovation. And I don't think they're going to do very well. SaaS has a very strong survival mechanism. It's a very sticky product and business model. And I've seen companies that stopped innovating 10 years ago still survive and generate ridiculous cash flows for many, many years to come. But they're not going to grow. They're not going to thrive. And that's definitely not what we're here to do. We want to grow and thrive. So I think we are now having to prove ourselves worthy of our customers' trust and time and money by launching agents and launching the newest, most powerful technology available to us.
And how do you see Spain specifically fitting into this? Because from what I've seen, HR tech in Spain is booming. I mean, apart from maybe hospitality and travel tech, which is obviously a sector of importance in the Spanish economy, I was surprised to see this much HR tech coming out of here. We saw Orbio, Shakers, they raised good rounds. Why do you think Spain is kind of becoming a little bit of a hotspot for all of that?
Yeah, those are all great companies, by the way. Friends of mine are in their founding team. So I think Spain has a really strong engineering culture and a very strong design culture. I think we all have this mindset of our home country is not big enough for our ambition. And that's something that I hope to copy from the entrepreneurs in Sweden or in Israel, where they go global right away. And a lot of the biggest tech successes outside of the US or China are coming from these relatively small countries. So I think Spain has the potential to do that. We have some challenges in Spain for sure, but I think it's in the nature of entrepreneurs to not complain. And when they see a problem or a challenge, just focus on fixing it or overcoming it or even stepping over it, but just making sure that it doesn't slow them down. We have very high quality entrepreneurs. I think we've had for a long time, but the ecosystem is maturing a lot. We see repeat entrepreneurs. We see strong founders becoming business angels, some even VCs. We see European VCs paying a lot of attention to Spain. We see US-based VCs paying a lot of attention to Spain. So it's behind Germany, definitely behind the UK, but it's growing very, very well.
And how does this compare to, because I want to go back to your time at Redbooth, because I think that's an interesting angle of what you bring here, is your time, the years you spent in San Francisco. You know, in my opinion, it seems like you can bring this this contrast of experience in the U.S., Silicon Valley, San Francisco Bay Area, versus the Spanish Barcelona ecosystem. How do those two compare?
Yeah. So I as you said, no, I spent a few years in the San Francisco Bay Area in Silicon Valley in my early 20s. Those were very formative years. They taught me ambition. They inspired me a lot, meeting founders that were doing, world-changing companies and not just trying to get a quick exit and trying to make a quick buck. They're actually trying to go after massive industries, which I didn't see in Spain. It was happening, but not so much for me to be able to see it in my early 20s. And I definitely opened my eyes after spending a few years in San Francisco. I also learned that they're not smarter than we are. Maybe they have more VCs around and more meetups and kind of more executive talent available to hire. But the raw materials that we're dealing with, I'm actually more happy with the amount of talent and the type of talent I'm able to find in Europe and in Barcelona specifically versus the fierce competition for talent that I had to deal with in San Francisco. So I actually thought once you open your eyes to a global ambition and, a high degree of belief in your own ability, you are in an advantage by building a great global company outside of Silicon Valley. So I think there are a lot of founders that are realizing this right now in Europe or realize this in the last few years. And a lot of amazing companies are being founded in Europe. And I would say even right now with the new AI businesses, the ones that are coming out of Europe have nothing to envy from the ones that are coming out of Silicon Valley.
So then the way the ecosystem's looking right now, would you encourage new founders to stay in Europe and grow in Europe? Or is there still value to getting that experience in the US?
I don't think it's any of my business to advise people on where to build their businesses at. I would say there is a great lesson to be learned by spending time in Silicon Valley, particularly. I think that is very inspiring. And I'm a nerd. I'm a computer engineer. So, going around Google and Apple and, Facebook back in the day, I think that was very inspiring to see where all the great entrepreneurs that I admired growing up and I still admire today, kind of, their native environment looks like and feels like. That was something that I would want to do again. I think you can get similar levels of ambition and brainwash, if you let me, by working inside of startups or with teams of entrepreneurs that have this mindset. Maybe because, you know, we went there, saw it, and brought it back to Barcelona or to wherever we are, or because, you know, the internet and people are just more global and kind of getting this level of spark without necessarily needing to spend time there. So I think it's a great experience to hang out in Silicon Valley. I don't think you need it at all. The reason I went there, to be very transparent with you, is because we couldn't raise money in Europe. With my previous company, we were trying to raise a Series A. And we ended up raising a $5 million Series A from a US-based investor. And this investor required us to move to San Francisco. So the reason for me to move there was just out of necessity. You know, that we wanted to raise the money. We needed to raise the money, to be honest, with to compete with large software companies that were raising a lot of capital in Silicon Valley. And the money wanted us to stay there. So we, you know, we stayed, or we actually moved there to be able to keep the money that we raised from investors. In 2016, when we co-founded Factorial, to be honest, we didn't know for sure if we would be able to stay in Barcelona. So we thought we would like to stay in Barcelona, but I remember the conversation with my co-founders. We also said, we'll do whatever it takes. So if we need to move the company and ourselves to the US, then we'll do that. Luckily for us, you know, the ecosystem matured and we were able to get great European early stage investors. But also we were able to get great US based investors that send the money to Europe. And, you know, Factorial is still a Spanish entity, which is rare. Most global startups and scale-ups in Europe, or I don't know if most, but I think most, end up flipping to a US entity. And, you know, we haven't. We're still a Spanish entity.
Well, that you actually went straight to my next question, really, which is this topic of funding, because you've talked a lot about the talent and how much talent there is. But do you feel that the funding-wise things have improved in Europe since 2016 when you began, or even before with Redbooth?
100 times over. I think the quality of Business Angel. So Business Angel, I think, really deserves its label. It's really an angel fallen from heaven that helps an entrepreneur that has a vision, has an ambition, but has no clue, has no network, and has no money. And the Business Angel usually empathizes a lot with founders because it's pretty much always founders or business owners of a previous generation most of the times. And I think the type of business angels that existed in Europe, especially in Spain, but in Europe in general, when I got started, were from very different types of businesses. No, they were not software companies. They were maybe internet companies, but from the early generations and most of the times, not even internet companies. So they were networks and areas of knowledge that we didn't have access to through the Business Angels. I think the quality of Business Angels now in Europe is very, very, very good. It's amazing, actually. I think early stage VC is very strong in Europe. I think the growth stage VC is still early. There are a great few funds. We're happy to have one of them on our cap table, Atomico, who led our Series C three and a half years ago, is one of them. But there are very few growth funds that can continue to fund the company through their Series B, C, D, you know, hundreds of millions of euros at a time. And then you typically end up having to get on a plane, travel to New York, travel to San Francisco, Asia, Middle East. There's a lot of money that is willing to invest in European companies, but you still need to get on a plane a lot of the times.
And of course, you've also expanded into being an angel investor yourself. And then there's ITNIG, which I believe you mentioned in the beginning, and the funding you do through there. And that's a pattern I've seen with really the most successful founders, is eventually you all seem to go into angel investing yourselves, or at least kind of try again both sides of that conversation. So I'm curious then, since you began investing yourself, has there been a different approach to the way you've managed Factorial, or even seen certain patterns with founders recently?
I mean, at the end of the day, you learn that what matters the most are these like fundamental drivers of human behavior. And and what we typically look for in a team member for Factorial is not very different to what we look for in a founder to invest in. One has, you know, the capacity or the mindset and the drive to go out and start on their own, but others want to do this with other people. And maybe their skill set is better suited in a larger organization. That's fine. But at the end of the day, we look for similar traits And that is the most important. And I think our ability to assess talent, which at the end of the day, I think is a big part of what we do, is just spot talent and then be able to sell the project to this insane talent, is not very different between hiring great people for Factorial versus finding entrepreneurs and asking for them to let us invest in their company. Definitely, it keeps you fresh doing early stage investing. So my co-founder Bernat and I manage a small pre-seed fund called IDNIC Capital. It's a 15 million euro early stage fund. And we see a lot of pre-seed, very early stage founders. And it keeps us fresh. We see what's possible when you don't have 1,000 plus employees, when you don't have tens of thousands of customers and partners and a lot of money and investors to deal with, when you have no restrictions or constraints, or actually rather, your constraint is that you have nothing. You definitely think out of the box in a way that maybe it's not so intuitive for an organization that's already established, and it inspires us a lot. And I also, to be honest, just selfishly, I love hanging out with other entrepreneurs. So asking for the right to invest in their companies is an excuse to hang out with amazing entrepreneurs and ideally be able to help them a little bit. There are some chapters of the movie that we've seen and that we can help a little bit with. There's network and there is capital that we can share with them to kickstart their journey and then learn a lot and get inspired by them.
Hmm. What you're saying, it reminds me that I was on a panel with a former Factorial employee, Francesc Navarro, and he went on to found his own company, which, if my notes are right, it's Hollow. Yes, which is it's a health tech company. But he also he mentioned the same thing you're talking about, how he felt that Factorial was really encouraging to people that wanted to continue on and do their own ventures, and that it was something you looked for in employees. So I think that's always such a good strategy, and it seems to be paying off, as in we're already seeing employees of yours that are going out to do other things.
Yeah, there are many cases like that. I think Francesc and his co-founders are all ex-Factorials, and we have a few companies that are full ex-Factorial founders and others that went on to co-found companies with other talented founders as well. I'm not going to lie. It's always bad news when you lose talent from your project, but it's also something that we understand. When we hire such ambitious and talented people, at some point they might want to go out on their own, and hopefully we can help them there as well.
And are you seeing, because we've talked about automation, AI a little bit before, but I kind of want to bring it back now, because you're talking about talent and we're talking about what your patterns you're seeing. I'm curious to hear about how you're seeing the implementation of AI now, because I'd say, a good percentage of our coverage now it has to do with companies that its base is AI. How do you feel about that? Is there a danger there with kind of basing a whole company on an AI offering?
Mm. Not anymore. I think 2023, 2024, some people might have moved a little bit too early and potentially placed bets on grounds that were not very solid. And there's potentially a sunk cost there that then they need to move out from. I think there is a much bigger risk of not moving soon enough. I think we're in, 2026, March 2026, we're recording this. There is no question. I don't think there is any software that is non-AI that makes sense anymore. So I think everybody should be betting their entire business on taking full advantage of the newest models of, full agentic user experiences. I'm not saying everything will be a chat. I don't think that is necessarily true. I think there are many ways to interface with computers, which is at the end of the day what we do. No? We have computers that do work for us, but now computers can do a lot more work for us. And they're with many more degrees of freedom, which unlock new capabilities and unlock new patterns of user experience that are just so fascinating. So I think there is no alternative to being full AI right now, unless you're just, milking a cash cow from the past and you are okay with this company disappearing in the future or becoming massively irrelevant in the future. There is no alternative but to go all AI.
Hmm. Is there any fear on Factorial's side for things like an AI bubble that there's all this investment going on, AI companies, large valuations? Is there any fear on Factorial's side to be going kind of all forward on that?
I think the fear now, I so There's no fear on going all AI. I don't think AI as a technology is a bubble. I think AI is incredible, and I have like 0.00% chances of being wrong about that, to be honest. I think the fears that I might have are that the markets are really bad at handling this level of uncertainty and speed of transformation. So what's happening in some public stocks can influence investor behavior. And I see investors valuing great businesses that are taking full advantage of AI very poorly, and that can have consequences in the cost of capital for other businesses. Mm. Luckily, we don't need to raise money. We've been sustainable for more than 2 years. But I always want the cost of capital to be low so that we can invest in newer things. And right now, it's a confusing moment in the markets. But I also see the same investors overvaluing companies that are obviously at risk of being replaced by one of the big AI labs. And, they probably did get replaced by one of the big labs in the last few weeks, and the investors didn't even realize that. Like the speed of disruption at which Anthropic and OpenAI and some other of the big labs are shipping amazing products and are making these thin AI products kind of very replaceable is nerve-wracking. So I think as an investor, I'm more concerned than as a business founder, because as a business founder, my job has always been and will always be to solve my customers' problems with the newest, most amazing technology I have access to. So that didn't change. The technology changed, but that's cool, actually. It's fun. As an investor, it's a little bit more confusing, and the markets are a bit drunk at the moment.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you one final question, and then I'll let you get back to your day. I did promise your comms people 30 minutes, so I'm going to stick to it. I think you've talked about kind of the process of Factorial and everything you look for in the future. I think an important question to finish this on is where you see Factorial going from now. Because you're already a unicorn, you're already self-sustainable. You've even gone through acquisitions yourself. I have here 2023 Fuel. I'm gonna check pronounce it. So what's next really for you? Is there an IPO in the future? What's the idea for Factorial?
Well, we just said that the markets are drunk, so definitely in no rush to IPO and become a victim of the markets anytime soon. We have the business in a very good place right now, where we are very well funded. We are sustainable. We're not consuming resources to continue to grow. We're growing very fast, and our markets are very deep. So right now we're busy building products, building agents, landing new clients, helping our clients grow. And our short-term, mid-term plan is to just do exactly the same. Ship more products, land more clients, help them grow. We're very focused on Europe. We are seeing some exciting developments around Europe in relatively new parts of the world where organically we're growing. We're starting to grow through our global partnership ecosystem. So I think you're going to hear a lot about Factorial launching new AI products, new agents, Factorial conquering new markets, but Factorial remaining a fast-growing independent business for a very, very long time, hopefully.
Great. Well, us here at Ustarps are definitely going to continue to keep an eye on you. And of course, all your employees that go on to find their own companies will also be keeping an eye on them. So I want to thank you kindly for coming onto the podcast, Jordi. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Of course. Talk soon.
Bye-bye.